You are listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMMLP, Burlington, Vermont. I'm Shayla Shapiro, and this is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. Write the Book features interviews with authors, poets, illustrators, agents, and editors. Today on Write the Book, you'll hear a number of interviews. We're doing something a little bit different. First, I'm going to air a 15-minute interview, a little longer than 15 minutes, with Mohsin Hamid, author most recently of How to Get Filthy Rich in Rising Asia. And then I will play a series of very short interviews that I conducted at the AWP Book Fair in Boston a little over a week ago. I will talk about those a little more before I broadcast them later in the hour. Before I give Mohsin Hamid's bio, I want to just mention that I am now accepting submissions of writing prompt outcomes for possible inclusion on the show. If you're happy with something that you've written after using a Write the Book prompt, email it to me. I have submission guidelines on the podcast site. Mohsin Hamid is the author of the novels Moth Smoke, The Reluctant Fundamentalist, and How to Get Filthy Rich in Rising Asia, which was published by Riverhead on March 5th. His fiction has been translated into over 30 languages, shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize, featured on bestseller lists, and adapted for the cinema. His short stories have appeared in The New Yorker, Granta, and The Paris Review, and his essays in The Guardian, The New York Times, and The New York Review of Books. Born in 1971, he has lived about half his life on and off in Lahore. He also spent part of his early childhood in California and attended Princeton and Harvard, and worked for a decade as a management consultant in New York and London, mostly part-time. When I spoke to Mohsin Hamid last week, I began by asking him to talk about the structure and point of view of his new novel, How to Get Filthy Rich in Rising Asia. The book masquerades as a self-help book and is written in the second person. His website describes the novel in this way. You, a poor village boy, want above all else to achieve fantastic wealth. Here in 12 steps is how to do so. Just please try not to lose your heart to that pretty girl along the way. So here is my interview with Mohsin Hamid.
Well, the two things are related. The self-help book premise came, I've been working on the book for 2 or 3 years and not really getting anywhere. And I was talking to a friend of mine who's a magazine editor. And we're talking about literature and reading novels and how sometimes it can be hard work. Mm-hmm. And we're doing it because it's good for us. And I thought, you know, well, I told him that my next novel is going to be a self-help book, and I was joking. But when I went back to Pakistan, this conversation was in New York, I couldn't shake the idea. And the more I thought of it, the more I thought, well, novels are kind of like self-help books. I write novels to help myself as a human being. And I think when I read novels, something of that is going on too. And so it became actually a way to have a kind of interesting exploration of what novels are.
Yeah, yeah. It goes back. I read a few interviews that you've given before, and somewhere I ran across a quote that you said that a novel is like a divided man's conversation with himself, which seemed really appropriate for a self-help book.
I think that's right. I think we are all pretty divided, and so there is a bit of that. And as far as the second person is concerned, you know, it's. I think what makes novels special is partly that readers create so much of them. You
yeah.
know, that you are looking at this text and imagining human beings, and so the idea of the reader as a co-creator or the reader as a character feels pretty natural to me, and the you form allows you to do that.
And you did that with The Reluctant Fundamentalist as well, correct?
Exactly. In The Reluctant Fundamentalist, there's a you. A Pakistani man is talking to an unnamed stranger that we think is probably American, and we never hear the other stranger speak. And he's addressing that person as you.
Yeah.
But the basic narrative is about the Pakistani man, which is a first-person narrative. So it's a dramatic monologue.
Okay.
But this time, it's a full-blown, you know, I guess the full Monty, you know, it's an actual second-person narrative.
Now, you didn't name the characters. There's a boy who we follow from childhood into old age. And then there's, you know, the pretty girl who's he's attracted to. And so I wondered if not naming the characters went along with that same impulse for you of using the second person and letting the reader be a character in your book in a way.
I think so. I think when you have names like the mother, father, brother, sister, a pretty girl, you, it does allow the reader to project onto those characters what they associate with those words, and allows them to you know, be more of a character in the book. But at the same time, I think what having no names can do is it sort of de-exoticizes the book.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a place of just Pakistani names, and the religion isn't Islam, and the place of worship isn't a mosque. These are just human things, you know, religion, place of worship, mother, father. And so it takes you out of the peculiar and saying, oh, well, here's this, you know, potentially Pakistan-like place that's so different. And instead, you know, hopefully gets you to the point of thinking, well, there are a lot of things that are incredibly similar.
Yeah, which I think is very interesting for people who are reading about a place they've never been to realize that there are those similarities and that we are all just human beings, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, as someone who's traveled in my whole life, I've been bouncing around between America, Pakistan, Europe. Although, of course, places are different. You know, it's amazing how much of the basic human journey is exactly the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the point of view, the second person, not to kind of beat you over the head with it, but I wondered the extent to which you felt compelled by the rules of point of view. You know, I noticed that sometimes you do kind of veer out of the strict narrative viewpoint and go into someone's head. You know, at one point the mother says something that the boy has not heard. So we know that it's not strictly within the same rule of point of view. So what are your feelings about that?
Well, in a sense, what I was enjoying doing in this one was by the second person is kind of an ambiguous point of view in this novel. You know, where is it exactly?
Right.
And what I liked was it could zoom in and have the same intimacy as a first person point of view. You know, it almost becomes an I, the you at moments. It's really internal.
Yeah.
And then it can sort of zoom out to kind of a cosmic level and just talk about how the city itself is functioning or. And then it can also zoom over in, you know, a kind of more traditional third-person form where you're looking inside the heads of other characters who are in a different place and totally unconnected to the main character of the novel. So it's a wonderfully flexible point of view, I think, that you can get from the second person. At least I found that to be the case.
Yeah, okay. Now, as I said earlier, the book moves through time. It takes us from the boy's illness as a very tiny child in a poor village to his being an old man. And each chapter picks up the next part of the story several years after the last. So I was wondering if it was ever hard for you to cut out a chunk of time in this person's life, or did this work fine for you and it wasn't ever a problem?
It wasn't really a problem because, you know, it's a bit like it's trying to assemble, you know, I mean, any novel is obviously a bit impressionist in the sense that, you know, it so much that is not on the page is going to be part of the story of the characters involved in the novel.
Right.
And I just wanted to heighten that because I think there's, you know, there's a kind of aesthetic of efficiency that I believe in, which is, it sounds terrible, but I think it can be actually a powerful thing because, you know, poetry has traditionally had a kind of aesthetic or efficiency where you don't have to say that much. You just say what you need to say to achieve the effect of whatever scale you're going for.
Yeah.
But in the novel, oftentimes there's a counter aesthetic, which is, you know, just this maximalist thing. Tell the whole story. My concern was that, you know, in Pakistan where I live, so many people don't read literary fiction and they're frightened of literary fiction.
Mm.
And so I think that, you know, if you don't want to compromise on your sentences and you don't want to compromise on the complexity of what you're trying to orchestrate, maybe the thing to do is to write small books because they're less frightening to people. And you know, so many people in Pakistan who read my work, they'll say, you know, it's the first novel I've ever read.
Oh, wow.
And so for me, that is a big part of my project, is to write novels that, you know, they are as big as they need to be, but they are trying to be small so that you can be caught up in the experience, read it, you know, cover to cover, and be done without having become aware of necessarily your fear of books or being intimidated by the size of the thing.
Right, and it's funny, it sounds like you've made the experience of reading the book a little bit easier for your reader, but I wouldn't think it's necessarily easier to write a book that's smaller. Yeah.
No, I mean, sadly, my first two books took 7 years each, and my third one has taken six. So I've spent 20 years writing three books. And I think it's, in fact, it's kind of the opposite, is that whittling it down and trying to find out, a form that allows you to tell. I mean, for example, this novel, How to Get Filthy Rich in Rising Asia, is an epic in a way.
Yeah.
You know, it's birth to death, city, countryside, multiple social classes, family saga, love story. And so the potential for it was to be really big. But I think the self-help book frame, the choosing to like take moments in his life every few years as he goes from birth till death, were ways to take what is a normal epic saga kind of a story, and render it in a sort of slender form.
Yeah. One thing that I really loved about the book was there's a sort of desperate tone in its early chapters, especially. There's like this heightened sense of want that I think, goes along with the boy's poverty, but also with his just being a teenage boy. And it so nicely sort of overlaps the wants that he has, the desire for employment and to be able to pay for his own expenses. He wants to get fit. He wants to be able to afford protein and look good. But he's also very desperate for the pretty girl. And all of these seem to fit really well together. It feels like there's this one line in the book: she does not stare at you, but when your eyes meet, she does not look away. And this moment feels like such a success for him, and it's really, it's sort of not a great love success, but it's, he's so desperate for her and everything that he wants. I liked that part of the book. Do you remember writing that part of the book? And when he's a teenager, was that a time in his life that was particularly easy or difficult to write?
Well, thank you. And it's in a way, the love story is the heart of the book. And in that initial teenage chapter when they first meet, that was where the energy that was going to then course through his entire life till the very end had to be found and forged. So it was, I guess, for me, having a really hard-edged book that talks about a very tough life.
Yeah.
Paradoxically made it easier to write a real soft love story.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the worry of being overly sentimental is slightly mitigated by a tough context that you find the sentimentality inside of.
Yeah, he's been through so much already that this is going to seem maybe comparatively easier or softer or something.
Yeah, I mean, I think what it comes down to is that when you're writing a love story, at the end of the day, if you gush, and this novel is very much a love story. I mean, if you gush, you kind of undo it.
Yeah.
And one thing which is interesting about living in Pakistan is that because there are so many restrictions and constraints that people face, so much of what our love stories get their potency from the inability to connect and the inability to be together and the inability to contact. That's the Romeo and Juliet energy of a love story. And that was something I was trying to tap into for his, as you say, the desperation that he feels.
Mm-hmm. It totally came through. Well, I wonder what you would name as your biggest challenge when it came to writing How to Get Filthy Rich in Rising Asia. Is there something that comes to mind?
The biggest challenge, I guess, was trying to figure out, the form of the novel.
Mm.
I knew the story. And I knew what I wanted to explore, that, all of these different slices of socioeconomic activity and human beings, from really poor to very wealthy, and also, what life is, and both as a young person and also for somebody who's near to death. I mean, those things I knew I wanted to do. I just didn't know how I would build a novel around them. And so I tried writing it first as a collection of multiple first-person points of view, and it failed miserably. I tried third-person stuff, and it just wasn't working. And eventually, when the self-help book stroke, second-person frame appeared, and I began to work, that was what cracked, I think, the biggest challenge I had in writing the book.
At that point, did you already have a lot written that you were able to kind of reshape into this frame, and it worked for you?
No, I actually threw it all away. I mean, I published some of the multiple first-person pieces as short stories. But no, there probably isn't a single paragraph between the book that, you know, you see now and those early drafts. And that's usually the case for me. In both of my previous books, which took 7 years each, the first two or three drafts were just completely gone.
Wow.
And in a way, I mean, it sounds traumatic. It's not traumatic. It's just that you need to create a cocoon inside which the transformation takes place.
Yeah.
And so sometimes you mistake the butterfly. But I'm now getting to the point where I recognize that those first couple of drafts are just cocoons, and their purpose is to make possible the butterfly, not to be the butterfly themselves.
Okay. It's funny, that kind of leads nicely into my last question for you, which was any advice you might have for writers who might be starting to approach a revision for a final draft, or, you know, after finishing a first draft, what advice you might have for approaching revision?
Well, I think, you know, for me, when I approach revision, there's always two things that that I do. One is I edit with my ears and not my eyes. So I read my stuff aloud hundreds and hundreds of times. Most of my day as a writer is spent pacing my bedroom reading my stuff.
Okay.
Because I find that I'm better able to sift the pebbles out of my prose, you know, out of the sand of the prose, by hearing it spoken. So that's one thing I do just relentlessly when I'm revising, and also just every day as I look at yesterday's writing. And the second thing is, you know, in a revision, I try to think, you know, how do I skew my perspective so that I can see slightly differently what I've done? And for me, often that is, you know, I'm thinking about the form of the book, and twisting that. If you're happy with the form of the book, then it's a very light revision. But if you're not, sometimes pivoting it, you know, changing something in its form can unlock all kinds of creativity inside you as a writer.
When you say form, you mean sort of the overall structure of the book?
Yeah, I mean, so for example, in my first novel, it wasn't until I structured it as a kind of a surreal trial in which all of the different actors are telling their stories to you, the judge, that it really began to work. Before that, it was a straight narrative. The novel, the story wasn't that different, but the form of it had changed. And Nothing Fundamentalist, my second novel, is a Pakistani man speaking to an American a man, and we never hear the American man speak back. It's a conversation. The story is still, the story that he tells is of a man who leaves Pakistan and moves back to America. But the form of it, the frame, is different. So for me, when I shift, you know, the form that the story is going to take, the vessel inside which the story is contained, oftentimes I'm able to get more out of it than when I just try to do a straight up, you know, line for line revision.
Okay. All right. That's great advice. Well, thank you very much for speaking with me today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And I really enjoyed the book. So the book again is How to Get Filthy Rich in Rising Asia, Mohsin Hamid, and it's Riverhead Books. So best of luck with it, and thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Mohsin Hamid. You can read more about his work on his website, mohsinhamid.com, and his name is spelled MOHSINHAMID. The second half of today's show consists of a series of interviews that I did week before last at the AWP conference in Boston. AWP stands for Associated Writing Programs, and it's an organization that has a lot to offer writers, but one big thing that it offers is this conference that takes place once a year in various cities around the country. I think next year it's going to be in Seattle, but this year it was in Boston. They have panels and workshops and readings and all kinds of things going on. One feature of the conference is an enormous book fair in which journals and small presses and other literary entities set up booths and talk to people who are attending the conference. They talk to people about what they do. And there are, you know, 12,000 people at the book fair. at the conference, and a lot of them are at the book fair in any one given moment. So anyway, I toured around the book fair and spoke with people who were associated with various literary journals, and I asked them to talk about what they look for in submissions, what themed issues they might have coming up, what contests, or any other news that they might like to share about their journals. There were literally thousands of people at this conference, as I say, and so and also there were readings going on actually in the background at the book fair itself. So the noise was pretty terrific, and I'm hoping that you'll find what you hear in the background of these interviews as ambiance. And also my own voice did this strange little AM radio thing from time to time, but I think you'll be able to hear what's being said. If not, my apologies. In any case, I am going to put up a list of these journals on Write the Books podcast site, and I'm going to link each to its appropriate website, should you care to, because some of the journals neglected or forgot to mention their website, and I want to make sure that you can, you know, have a look at all of them online, so I will link those sites. But in the meantime, here is the audio that I captured at the AWP conference week before last, and I hope that you enjoy this.
I'm at the AWP book fair talking to journals about what they're looking for, what they look for, and I'm with Hunger Mountain, Micaiah Bagalt. And what's your official title?
Editor.
So what do you look for in a submission?
Right now, we're about to start having all of our online issues are going to be themed starting this summer. So right now, we're actually looking for pieces of poetry, fiction, creative nonfiction, YA and children's lit that fits into certain themes that we're just announcing here at AWP for the first time, and we'll put them on the website.
Great.
After the conference is over. So, for instance, the very first themed online issue this summer is going to be the first issue, first date, first kiss, first apartment, first acceptance letter. We're looking for that kind of work. And then we'll list all of our other themes on the website.
Okay. Sounds good. So wait, now when are those submissions due for the firsts?
That one, we need those submissions in by April 1st.
Okay.
Coming right up.
April Fool's Day.
Yes.
Okay.
But for all the other submissions, there's a bit more time. So
okay.
We're going to the website to check it out.
To check it out. Okay. Thank you. Okay, so I'm talking to Charlotte Seeley, who's the editor-in-chief of ReDivider, a journal of new literature and art. So if you wanted to talk about the contest that's coming up.
Sure. So ReDivider is a journal out of Emerson College. It's run by the graduate students in the MA and MFA program. And right now we are running a contest. It's called the Beacon Street Prize. We do it every year. This is our second year. It is in fiction and poetry. The winners of the contest get $500 each and publication in our 11-1 issue. The judge for fiction is Amy Hempel, and the judge for poetry is Heather McHugh, and it is open now until April 30th.
April 30th.
Yep, and you can go to our website to enter. It's a $15 entry fee, but you get a free subscription with every entry.
Oh, okay, cool. And what's the website?
ReDividerJournal.org, and we're on Twitter, ReDivider Mag, and Facebook as well.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, your name is?
Rachel Mennies.
Okay. Rachel Mennies.
Mennies, like pennies, but with an M.
Rachel Mennies, and you're the review editor for Agni.
Yes.
And if you wanted to just talk a little bit about Agni.
Sure. So Agni is one of the interesting things that we do is we publish biannually a print issue. So every year we have two issues that come out that have really spectacularly curated fiction, poetry, nonfiction. Online, we also publish twice a month, fiction, poetry, nonfiction, and reviews, which is the responsibility that I have here at the magazine. I can speak to reviews in particular. We love reading review essays, really stuff that critically engages with text that you love. We like authors to come to us with books that they'd like to review. I'm always reading stuff. We here at Agni, we love being here in Boston. It's great to be in home turf. And in particular, I know we're always looking for really exciting new fiction, poetry, nonfiction. We love getting stuff from all over. We did an issue a few years ago called the Africa issue where we had work from African writers and we had them come in and give a reading. We're always interested in that sort of new perspective and some fresh voices. We also love to have work by some established writers. Our newest issue, let me take a peek here. We have great work in here by Martha Cooley, by Sandra Beasley, a wonderful poet, Sharon Olds. Really good stuff. excellent fiction in here as well, and some translations. We always like to read her translations as well.
Your name is?
Adam McComber.
Okay, and you are the?
I am the managing editor and the associate editor, so you can call me whichever one you want.
Okay, all right, great. So the journal is Hotel America, so what's it affiliated with?
We're affiliated with Columbia College Chicago.
Yeah.
And we're published out of the nonfiction department there. We are a magazine that does all three genres. So we do poetry, nonfiction, and fiction. And we're also really interested in blended genre and transgenre work. We do special issues every once in a while. We did a special issue on the aphorism. We're still very interested in receiving aphorisms, if anyone wants to send us those. And also an issue on the epistle, the letter form. So we're interested in that as well.
Oh, cool. Great. Yeah. What's the website people can find out more information?
It's hotelamerica.net.
And it's America with a K.
Yes, America with a K, like
why
Kafka.
Why is it America with a K?
It's from Franz Kafka.
Okay.
It's America.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, I'm standing here at the Columbia Poetry Review table with Brian Miles and Tara Boswell, who are both editors of a previous issue, and say again, you...
The upcoming issue, issue 26.
Oh, the upcoming issue. Okay, sorry about that.
No.
Talk a little bit about Columbia Poetry Review.
So, we are a review, so our tastes are pretty varied. We're pretty eclectic. I think we probably lean towards, I'd say, a more urban aesthetic. Would that be a proper way to describe it?
Yeah, I think so. You know, new poetry and new voices, new forms. And I think most of our review is pretty urban.
Yeah.
A lot of Chicago poets, but we publish poets from all around the world writing in English.
Yeah.
Upcoming issue has people from Hong Kong.
Ireland, yeah.
And you guys are affiliated with Columbia College in Chicago.
We are. We are the student edited journal out of Columbia College. Court Green is the faculty edited journal. We do showcase student work. I think this the previous issue was about 10%, 10-15% student work. But we field submissions, from all over.
And our website is column.edu/Columbia Poetry Review.
Mm-hmm. And the submission guidelines are on there. The submission period coming up next is August 1st to November 30th, and that'll be for issue 27. Issue 26 comes out in the spring. We have some really great writers. We're really excited about that. So.
Yeah, including Ray Armantrout, Kirsten Kashuk,
George Calamaris. Matt Hart is in there as well, so it's a pretty eclectic, I think, is the word to describe. Yeah.
Okay.
Really fun issue. We're looking forward to it.
All right, great. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you.
So I'm with Terry Kennedy, who's with Story South, and it's affiliated with...
We are affiliated with UNC Greensboro. We're an online journal.
Okay.
We publish fiction, poetry, creative nonfiction. Every once and again, we'll do a novel excerpt or a one-act play.
Okay.
And it is, our primary focus is work that is either from the South or about the South. Doesn't necessarily mean it has to be a writer from the South, but something oriented in that way.
How often does Story South come out?
Story South comes out twice a year, in September and in March.
And it's all online?
And it's all online. And in terms of stories, I'm looking for actually what is a good traditional story, right? The South is about storytelling, and that's kind of what we're looking for. In poetry, we look at kind of the lyric to narrative to all over the place.
All right. Okay, great. What is the website where they can find guidelines?
www.storysouth.com.
Okay.
One word.
All right. Thank you so much. I'm with Jennifer Whitaker, and you are the...
I am a contributing editor with K-Ball.
Okay.
And so K-Ball is a magazine that publishes poetry and art. We have one featured artist per issue, and we publish a smattering of poets in each issue. We're based in Greensboro, North Carolina. And so I guess really what we're looking for in terms of poetry is poetry that in some way startles us or is arresting in some way. And so we don't necessarily have a particular aesthetic. We publish things that are kind of range from narrative to lyric. But really what we're looking for are things that surprise us and make make us have to read them again.
Okay. All right, great. How often does it come out?
We come out twice a year, and issue 12 comes out in just a few days, so that'll be exciting, probably beginning of April.
Okay.
And then we usually come out once in the fall, once in the spring.
All right.
And so to find out more information, people can go to www.cavewallpress.com, and it gives more information and some excerpts from issues.
All right, great. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm talking to Natalie Messnard and Kendra Chapman with Ninth Letter. And so tell us about Ninth Letter.
Ninth Letter is a literary magazine run out of the University of Illinois, and we're in Urbana-Champaign. And our magazine is different because we work in conjunction with the art department. And so our undergrads actually take a class each semester in the art department, and they get the submissions for the upcoming issue, and they design the magazine based on those submissions. So our magazine is really visually influenced, and it always looks really gorgeous. So that's something that our writers like. They like to submit and see what cool things our department is going to do to their work.
Okay, great.
And for the first time, we're actually running a contest this year. So if you're interested in submitting to a contest, we are offering fiction, poetry, and nonfiction. So definitely visit our website to check that out if you're interested in submitting. The details in terms of guidelines for contest submission and who's judging are there on the website.
Okay.
Our regular submission period is currently closed because we're working on the contest, but it'll open again in September.
Okay, and what's your website?
The website is www.ninthletter.com.
Oh, perfect. That's easy to remember. Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm with Marjorie Tesser, who's the editor of The Mom Egg. So talk about The Mom Egg.
Hi. Well, The Mom Egg publishes work by everyone about mothers and by mothers about everything.
Okay.
We have an annual print journal, and the new issue is coming out in April. The theme is Mother Tongue. More information is available on our website, www.themomegg.com. And you can also find creative work on there, book reviews, interviews, and other fun stuff. So do check us out. Thanks a lot.
All right, great. Thanks.
I'm with Dr. Christine Redmond-Waldeyer, who's the... Are you the editor?
I'm the founder editor. We have contributing editors.
And it's for the Adana Literary Journal.
It's a woman's journal.
Okay.
We also accept submissions from men, providing their own women's topics. We do have themed issues. We have one annual print issue a year on general topics about women. We do have men contributors, but we have had a woman in war issue, how women grieve. We have women in spirituality coming up this summer. Currently accepting submissions for our third annual print issue. So we're about 2 years in existence. You know, we're working on a number of things. One of the ones I'm really excited about, which doesn't really go under women's topics, but over after Hurricane Sandy, I live in Central Jersey. We were affected very badly by Hurricane Sandy, and I'm putting together under Adana a journal of children's essays about what they lived through. So 7th and 8th graders from the elementary schools are submitting in, and so we expect to have that out within the next couple of months.
And has the submission date passed yet, or is that still open?
Well, it's generally for that localized area.
Okay.
So, and hopefully people will look into buying, because it's going to raise money for people that really need it, who lost their homes. And
yeah.
So that's something we're kind of looking forward to doing.
And what's the website?
Adana Journal. Blogspot.com. So
okay.
It's on adanablogspot.com.
It's A-D-A-N-N-A.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, great.
All right, great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So I'm with Kimberly Stahl and Sarah Miner with Sonora Review. So why don't you talk a little bit about what Sonora Review is all about?
We're based out of Tucson. We're with the University of Arizona's MFA program. We're MFA run. We have an upcoming contest, two upcoming contests. One is an essay contest judged by Dintine Moore, and the other is a short fiction contest judged by Ben Marcus. And those deadlines are May 1st for both of those. We're taking submissions year-round. We accept fiction, nonfiction, and poetry. We have, a really eclectic mix of, tastes and, what we want. So we try to publish kind of everything.
Like variety.
Yeah, a lot of variety.
And do you have a website that you can share?
We do. Our website is sonorareview.com.
Okay.
It's pretty easy.
Okay.
All right, so I'm talking to Mike Miner, who's with Solstice, a magazine of diverse voices.
So Solstice, as the title says, is about diverse voices, which I think we try to take a broad definition of what diverse is. Certainly we are after, you know, marginalized voices, you know, populations in jail or American Indian, for example. But, you know, beyond that, just a broad topic and a diverse, you know, sort of fiction or poetry or nonfiction. We take all genres. We do have a contest for poetry and nonfiction as well as fiction. And our website is solsticelitmag.org, and all the details can be found there. I think it's $18 to submit, and we have an editorial staff that goes through everything. And I'm one of the readers for fiction, and I think you submit through Submishmash, and it's all very simple and easy once you get on board.
Yes. How many issues do you publish a year?
We publish, like the Solstice, we publish at each Solstice, so we do two a year.
Perfect. That makes sense.
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. So I'm talking to Abigail Cloud, editor-in-chief of Mid-American Review. My eyes are spinning.
So if you wanted to just talk a little bit about the review.
Sure. Our review is published twice a year. We're out of Bowling Green State University, Ohio. We are really looking for a wide variety of work. We publish poetry, fiction, creative nonfiction, also reviews and translations. We're always looking for translations in languages that we haven't printed before. We have a translation chapbook coming up in Norwegian, which is very exciting. We are looking for work that has a little bit of a quirk to it. It doesn't have to be funny, but we look for things that are a little bit off-center. We also have a deadline coming up for our Fine Line contest for post poetry, short shorts, and everything in between, 500-word limits. So we always like reading those because the fiction and the poetry staffs can read them together and enjoy the amazing different things that people come up with.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. What's the website?
The website is www.bgsu.edu/MidAmericanReview.
Okay.
BGSU.
SU for Bowling Green.
That's great. That's
okay.
Great.
All right. Thank you very much for talking to me.
Thank you.
I'm with Samantha Plourd and Megan Mellinger. And they are with the
Rithala Review.
I should just let you speak. Rithala Review.
So is it associated with the program?
We're actually, it's a launch from the creative writing students and the publishing students at Rosemont College. Okay. It's first volume, first issue. And it's the website is rithalareview.org, R-A-T-H-A-L-L-A review.org. Like I said, first issue, first volume, and we're now accepting submissions for second and third. It is online and it is in print, and we take anything from fiction, poetry, creative nonfiction,
and art.
We've accepted chapters from novels. We have, you know, acts from plays, so we're pretty much all over the board,
straight
written and from all over the country.
Okay, all right. And you take stuff from new writers as well as established?
Absolutely.
Okay.
When they're read, it's usually a blind. You don't know who they are.
I'm with Mitchell Summers,
and he's with Philadelphia Stories.
Hi, pleasure to meet you.
You too.
I'm fiction editor for Philadelphia Stories here, manning the booth here at Book Fair.
Okay.
Philadelphia Stories is a regional publication, obviously centered on Philadelphia, Delaware Valley, South Jersey. We have a magazine that we publish quarterly. Have a press division and some books over here.
Okay.
Over here, not helping you at all because this is on the radio or a podcast. We have, as I said, we have a quarterly journal. We also have a really great contest. This is the third annual Marguerite Nguyen Prize for Fiction. It is a $2,000 award for fiction. We publish you. If you are not from the Philadelphia area, we bring you in, fly you in, pay for your Amtrak tickets, and we have an awards dinner in your honor. We're trying to get funding to have rose petals strewn in the winner's path. Funding has been cut, but I still will do an interpretive dance if you press me real hard.
Okay.
So,
what's the website?
The website, www.philadelphiastories.org.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Yes, and you are?
I'm the editorial assistant.
Editorial assistant for Plowshares.
Yes.
So what would you share about Plowshares?
I guess I would say that, so each issue, what separates us from the average literary journal is that each issue is guest edited by a different famous author or poet.
Right.
So our most recent issue that just came out is guest edited by the poet Major Jackson.
Okay.
So he's brought in various poets. Half of every issue is solicited directly by that guest editor, and the other half comes through our submissions in the office. Also coming up is our Emerging Writer Contest, which closes on April 2nd. Runs every year. This is the third annual year. Submissions include there's nonfiction, fiction, and poetry. Prose goes up to 6,000 words. Poetry up to 5 pages of poems. And it's really a great shot since, you know, we're a pretty large literary magazine. We tend to get a lot of submissions. But with the Emerging Writer Contest, it really gives people newer to the scene of writing a good shot and a better chance of being read by our editors.
Okay, great. What's the website?
It is www.pshares.org. That's
okay.
P-S-H-A-R-E-S.
Okay.
And all the information can be found there on our submission page.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
I'm talking with Andrew Snee with The Sun.
Hi.
Hi.
And we're really looking for writing right now. We're here at AWP really trying to scare up submissions. No particular themes coming up. Nonfiction, fiction, poetry, all of it. And we try to pay as well as we can. We're monthly, so we need it all year round.
Are you a print journal monthly? Or
yes, a
you
print
are?
Journal monthly.
Okay,
yes.
Cool. And what's the website?
The website is www.thesunmagazine.org.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Right.
Thanks very much. So I'm talking with Neil Shepherd, who I know is a poet, and he's also with the Green Mountains Review.
So I've edited the journal for 25 years, and a recent 25th anniversary retrospective on poetry and interviews about poets, essays on poetry, has just come out. There's one new issue. The entire look of the magazine changed.
Oh, yeah, wow.
From a rectangle to a square, and it's much more edgy, as the new editors like to say. The new editors are Jacob White, who's a fiction editor, and Elizabeth Powell, who's the poetry editor. And this newest issue features poetry of Eileen Miles and has poems by such people as Mark Halliday and Jill Osier and Denise Duhamel, and fiction by Norman Locke. And they're looking for, I would say, fiction. They're looking for edgy, they say,
okay.
Experimental, some flash fiction. The poetry runs the gamut from sort of language and lyric experiment to traditional narrative and lyric, and just send us your best work.
Okay. All right. What's the website?
The website is greenmountainsreview.com. We have two contests coming up.
Oh, okay.
There's the Neil Shepherd Prize in Poetry and the Neil Shepherd Prize in Fiction, and the deadline is April 15th.
Okay, cool.
And the judges are Joseph Novakovich in Fiction and Mark Halliday in Poetry.
All right. That's wonderful. Thank you. I'm talking to Rebecca Morgan Frank, the editor-in-chief of Memorias.org. So you talk about Memorias.
Hi. Yes, we're an online journal. We've been around since 2004, and we publish poetry, fiction, interviews, and also art song. We bring together composers with poets.
Oh, cool.
Create original work. We've been in Best American Poetry, Best of the Net, Best of the Web, Best New Poets.
Great.
And we're always looking for new writers. We've published a lot of emerging writers, and as well as established writers.
How often do you publish?
We put out 2 issues a year, fall, winter, and spring, summer issue.
Okay, and they're all on the internet?
We're on the internet, www.memorias.org.
Okay, all right, thank you very much. Great. I'm talking to Stephen Donadio with the New England Review.
We are a literary quarterly that was founded in the late 70s in the area of Hanover, New Hampshire. It's been at Middlebury for the past couple of decades at Middlebury College. And we publish a wide range of poetry, fiction, and nonfiction. Nonfiction of all kinds, including many translations, interviews, letters from abroad. And we encourage submissions from any writers out there who have work of interest.
Okay, and what's the website, please?
The website, www.nereview.com. www.nereview.com.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Talking with Leslie Salas, who's an assistant editor with the Florida Review.
What we like to see at the Florida Review is we take poetry, fiction, nonfiction, and graphic narrative, and we're looking for work that's aesthetically pleasing and is also emotionally resonant for the reader. So we want something that wows us, something that really stays with you. We want a story or an essay or, you know, a comic that when you put the book down and you leave it on the shelf, you're still like, whoa, like it's still with you. That's really what we're looking for. We do have two annual contests now. We've got an annual contest in fiction, nonfiction, and poetry that actually goes in the actual review. And we've got a chapbook prize, the annual Jeannie Lee Libby, prize in fiction or graphic narrative. The chapbook prize is up to about 25 pages, I believe, whereas the annual editor prizes in fiction, essay, and poetry, you're looking at $1,000 reward. So all of the information you can find at our website, which is http://floridareview.cah.ucf.edu. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. That's great.
I'm talking with Sonia Scher, who's the fiction editor for Barnstorm Literary Journal. So,
yes, and actually my co-fiction editor is Andrew McKernan.
Okay.
And we are an online literary journal sponsored by the University of New Hampshire. We accept submissions in nonfiction, fiction, and poetry. We are basically looking for good writing, writing that grabs us and moves us. We accept submissions year-round, although we tend to read mostly during the academic year.
And how often do you publish?
We publish on a rolling basis throughout the year.
Okay, great. And what's the website?
It is www.barnstormjournal.org.
Okay, all right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So I'm talking with Lisa Ampleman of the Cincinnati Review. She's an associate editor.
Hello, podcast crowd.
So if you can just talk a little bit, is the Cincinnati Review associated with any program? Or
yes. The University of Cincinnati sponsors the Cincinnati Review. We have some great funding through different programs there. We read August 15th through April 15th.
Okay.
We are looking for poetry, fiction, and nonfiction. We especially need good nonfiction all the time. For fiction, we read, we've printed short shorts, and we also read up to 40 pages.
Oh, wow.
So we read quite a range, and we print quite a range. And for poetry, same thing. We have quite a range. We have more formalist poems that use form that's important to what they're doing, and also more experimental things, like, and everything in between.
Okay.
So things that are trying something new, that are doing their project well. So that's what we look for.
Okay, great. What's the website?
The website is www.cincinnatireview.com. And I will spell Cincinnati, since sometimes people misspell it in their cover letters.
Okay.
It is C-I-N-C-I-N-N-A-T-I.
That's why you have it so handily spelled out on the cover.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So I'm talking to Barbara Deal, and what is your title with the Baltimore Review?
I'm the founding and managing editor.
Okay, great. So
let me tell you about our contest this summer. I think it's going to be great fun. There's a great theme. Our theme is threes. Three what? That's entirely up to you. Tercets, three stanzas, three characters, three rooms, three wishes, three sisters, three apples, a three-fingered man, triplets, a trinity, a triumvirate, a trio, a three on the roll of the dice, the three of swords, the rule. Of three. Three times the charm. So many possibilities. So we're going to select three winners from all categories. 3,000 word limit for fiction. 1 to 3 poems if you're submitting poems. We have cash prizes. We consider all the entries for publication. And the fine Baltimore writer Michael Kimball will be our judge. So enter. It'll be great. Great theme.
Okay. And it's for all different genres?
All different genres. We pick three winners from all genres. So winners could be three poems. It could be two stories in a poem.
Oh, okay,
it could be
great.
Two creative nonfiction pieces. So,
what's the website where people can learn more?
Just Baltimore
bookfairreview.org.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So I'm with Beth Bosworth, who is with the St. Anne's Review. Are you the editor?
I am the editor.
Okay.
Our magazine is comes out of Brooklyn, New York. We are that oddity of a literary journal that is, in fact, produced by a private high school for an adult reading public. We get submissions, thanks to the Internet, from all around the world and send our magazine out to a variety of Barnes & Noble and independent bookstores across the country. And you want to know what we look for?
Yeah. Well, first of all, do you take all genres?
We take fiction, we take poetry, we take creative nonfiction, memoir, essays, reviews, interviews. Translation is a very important part of what we do, and we're always looking for new translations.
Okay.
I wonder if we aren't a little hard to brand. We've been around 11 years, and we will take a classical short story and look at it and hope that it achieves what its intention is. If it has a beginning, a middle, an end, that's great. On the other hand, we'll also look at an experimental piece and try to judge it on its own terms, whatever those may be.
Does it come out? It
comes out twice a year. We have a new website. We are loading up more and more work.
And what's the website?
The website is www.stannesreview.com.
And it's Saint spelled out.
And it's Saint spelled all the way out, one word, no punctuation.
Okay.
No caps.
Okay, great.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. So I'm with Wendy Hsu, who's with IO. So if you could just talk a little bit about what that's about.
Yeah, so IO is a quarterly online journal, so our issues are fully online. We publish 4 times a year, and predominantly it's younger poets. A lot of them are pre-book poets, some middle career poets. And then also we do work in print a couple times a year to make chapbooks from some of our authors that we love from, you know, that we publish in the journal.
So chapbooks that are one author's work or an anthology type
of
thing?
We've never done an anthology. I think someday we hope to.
Okay.
But for the most part, after every issue, we'll look through it, and if there's somebody who we would love to see, you know, 12, 15 poems from, we'll ask and see if they have some sort of, like, chapbook-length manuscript.
Okay.
And so far, we've done 2, which is really exciting.
That is neat.
So,
okay. So what do you look for in submissions?
That's a funny question. Everybody asks that. We don't have an aesthetic. If you look at iopoetry.org, right, there's no sort of cohesive aesthetic. We'll publish everything from super spare language poems, you know, to narrative prose poems. Pretty much we have 2 editors and we read every submission. So if something moves us, makes us laugh, or sort of ideally both, I would say, it has a pretty good chance of getting in.
Okay, cool. And if you just want to say the website one more time?
Oh, yeah. It's www.iopoetry.org.
And it's I-O, the 2 letters, iopoetry.org.
Yep. That's
okay.
What it is. Yep.
Great. I'm talking to C. Russell Price, who's the senior poetry editor with TriQuarterly, which is with Northwestern University.
TriQuarterly is online now. We moved online in 2008. We publish every genre, plus we're really focusing on hybrid texts and video essays and poems that are hyperlinked out to other things. And we're really using the online platform as sort of a vehicle for hybrids and taking language and literature to a whole new level of experience. And so a lot of the stuff that we have coming in the next issue is playing with this, is playing with genre boundaries and expectations of a genre and what is accessible online and why does online sort of prove a neater platform to publish on than, say, in print, and what you can get away with online that you can't in print.
Yeah, very cool. So has that changed the way that your submissions come in?
It's really fun to read submissions because we get, since we're online, say your piece is rejected from Court Green or something else or someone that's doing a dossier on a subject, we get all your rejections and then we see a wave of sex poems, zombie poems, family poems. And so knowing about the other magazines and knowing what is out there will heavily affect what we accept and what we enjoy when we find it. Every magazine, of course, says they want something memorable and something strong, and we really feel that way, that we remember stories that we published 3 years ago because of one line or one image or an overwhelming sort of emotional intensity that we've never felt in, say, this type of nonfiction piece or this poem. So we're doing a lot of that, and we're having fun with having all kinds of writers and every social sphere covered.
Very cool. So do you want to just say the website again?
Yeah, it's triquarterly.org. You can find us online, submit online. We publish twice a year. We pay our writers pretty nicely. It's free to access, and yeah.
Okay, wonderful. Thanks. Thank you so much. So I'm talking to Claire McQuarrie with the Missouri Review. Are you an editor with the Review? Or?
Yeah, I'm the contest editor. Okay. And yes, so we have two contests every year that we do. We have an editor's prize competition in the fall, and we have actually upcoming is an audio competition where we look for recordings of people reading their poetry or prose or audio documentaries, and we give you $1,000.
Wow, awesome. So how do people submit audio content?
We do it online now, so you can send by email, just an MP3 file, really easy. And it's a pay-by-donation entry fee, so whatever you can afford. And it comes with a digital subscription to our journal. We have a digital version of the journal that is has an audio and like a downloadable format that goes on your computer that you can that basically is the same quality as our print journal. So,
okay. And how often does it come out?
That's quarterly.
Okay, and the print as well?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what's the website?
It's MissouriReview.com.
Okay, thank you so much. I'm talking to Vivian Dorsal, who's the founding editor of Upstreet Literary Magazine, and she's been a guest on Write the Book. So if you can talk a little bit about Upstreet.
Upstreet is published annually, and we publish fiction, creative nonfiction, and poetry. Our aspiration is to have a mix of established and emerging authors, because the most exciting thing for the editors is to discover new work.
Great. Okay, what's the website?
The website is www.upstreet-mag.org.
Okay, great. Thank you, Vivian.
I hope you enjoyed. That's sort of an unusual set of interviews, a little bit different for Write the Book. I'd love to hear what you thought of it. If you thought that the background noise was worth the information that you were getting, I would love to know what you thought. Okay, so as I said, I'll be putting up a list of these journals on Write the Book's podcast site and linking each to its appropriate website for you to visit, should you care to do that. Write the Book and The Radiator are supported in part by Anne Barbano's The Next Frontier, an issues-oriented program about autism, disabilities, and diagnoses. The Next Frontier can be heard every Thursday at 6 on The Radiator. Recipient of a 2012 Governor's Award, The Next Frontier features local, national, and international guests. Visit Anne Barbano's The Next Frontier on Facebook and Twitter for updates. I'm afraid this week that I've run out of time for the Bookworm's calendar. I'll bring it back next week. And today's Write the Book prompt is to write a one-page story, poem, or essay in the second person. Good luck with this exercise, and please listen next week for another. Write the Book has a Facebook page. If you're a Facebook user, please like us. If you're interested in sharing the show with out-of-town friends, let them know they can stream it live at theradiator.org every Monday from 2 to 3. Archived episodes of Write the Book are available on iTunes and at writethebook.podbean.com as free podcasts. As I said earlier, I'm accepting submissions of writing prompt outcomes for possible inclusion on the show. If you're happy with something that you wrote after using a Write the Book prompt to get started, feel free to email it to me. I have submission guidelines on the website. And if we have another show sometime that has a rather short interview, I might start reading some of those submitted Write the Book prompt outcomes on the show. Let's see. If you have a guest to recommend that I interview, if you have news about book-related events, if you're wanting to share a writing prompt, please send an email to writethebook@gmail.com. And as always, do remember that The Radiator is here thanks to community, support, and involvement. More information about The Radiator is available online at theradiator.org. This has been Write the Book. I'm Shayla Shapiro, and you're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMM, LP, Burlington, Vermont.